talk about money this morning. Wow, it gets your attention straight away, doesn't it? And even though the band are coming off stage, you're still looking straight at me. I know you get my attention when you talk about my money. Just ask my kids. When we talk about money, it raises the anxiety a little bit in some of us. Not because most of us don't have enough money, but we want to make sure we do have enough money. That sound about right? Here we are at the beginning of the financial year, where really soon, if you haven't already, you will have to give account to the government for the money that you have earned in the last 12 months. And they will want to make sure that you've given them their fair share in order to run the country. I don't know about you, but I'm sure you're the same. When you see your income in black and white, when you get your group certificate, you know, the electronic version these days, when you get it and you see the money that you've earned, you go, oh my goodness, what happened to all that? Are you the same? It's like, where did all that go? And you times it by 10, you know, if it's a decade, you're like, that's a lot of money, isn't it? The good news is we've got another 12 months, you can do it all again and you can earn it all again. You know, the people who came before us in faith and life had a very different rhythm of living. Of course, theirs was far more rural and dictated by agriculture. And every year, towards the end of the autumn, they would celebrate in what was known as a harvest Thanksgiving service. And some of you would have seen this, and some of you would have known it. I've seen photos and been part of churches that have been adorned with bales of hay and vegetables of all kinds, some that I didn't like, wheat, barley, oats, cheeses, you name it. And there was so much stuff out the front of the sanctuary that the preacher couldn't even get out to the front to preach. All of it was in order to symbolize the harvest that had been brought in, and more to the point, to say thank you for another year of life and sustenance. And I think, as very different peoples, we need to be really careful to not miss out on this ritual. And it is an important ritual that leads us into a process of giving thanks. And we should give thanks. As for our lifestyles, we are in danger of letting one year merge into another. And we need some markers in life that pull us up and give us a moment of pause to reflect. If we don't do this, I think we as humans run the risk of becoming automated. One year merges into another one, and before you know it, a decade has gone by and we've not stopped. So it's been my habit for the last quite a few years that I've been in ministry, at some point at the end or the beginning of the financial year, to talk about money. I did it last year and the year before that, and actually I've done it every year that I've been here. And one of my objectives this morning is for us to take time to consider what we have, to give thanks, and to examine the resources that we've been entrusted with in the light of what God thinks about that, in the presence of God. And it's time for us all to consider again what we give towards God's work. So today I'll be asking you to increase your giving to the work of the church. I want to say I'm really sorry if this is your first Sunday here. Or if you're a visitor, you should have been here last week. Like the last couple of weeks when we did the series, that sensational series on the Old Testament book of Ruth. Wasn't that good? Didn't you enjoy that? Wasn't it fantastic? So thank you especially to Marianne and to Sarah who brought to us such poise and wisdom and this beautiful application of this spectacular Old Testament narrative. If you missed out, then I encourage you to go to iTunes and listen in when it fits in your schedule. Personally, I do my podcast listening when I'm in the car, and it's certainly better than the radio. Next week, we begin part two of our Real series, and there are three topics that I would like us to cover. I've got many topics I'd like us to cover, but these are the three we're going to hit. Next week, time management. We're all busy. Are we really? The week after that, Mark Elford's going to bring to us his reflections on service. And then the third week and the final of our Real series, I want to talk to us about our insatiable appetites. I'm going to come right at that one. I do, though, want to reiterate what I often say, and that is this. Thank you. Thank you to all those who have given to the work of this church over the last year. Thank you to those who continue to apportion a section of their income so that the work of the church in this place can continue and, in fact, go ahead. I want to say thank you with all sincerity. And I want to say, as I always say as well, that Suzanne and I are fully committed here, and I mean financially fully committed here. This morning, in talking about this sermon with the elders, they've asked me to note today that this month marks the end of the pledge period for the building campaign that we started 3 years ago. Can you believe it's been 3 years since we started fundraising for our building? I'm pleased to announce this morning that the defects that we've been working through have now almost all been resolved, and we have a fully functioning complex on the inside. How good's that? You happy with that? I'm really happy with that. So we're going to do a little bit of a change to Soup Sunday next month. We've been doing it at the start of the month. Next month, we're going to do it at the end of the month on the 25th of August. And we'll have a celebration day to mark the start or the Thanksgiving that we have around recognising the wonderful building that we have. And so we'll move Soup Sunday to that day, and the moderator of the Uniting Church in South Australia is coming, and we'll invite lots of important people, including you. So please come, mark that date and come. As you can easily see, there's still quite a bit of work to be done on the outside of this building, including but not limited to, wait, there's more, fencing out the front, the extension of the cafe space to include outdoor seating, paving, and really importantly, shade for our children and our children's ministry. And there are many other things that need our attention. You just need to look around. The elders and I would be delighted if those who are continuing to give regularly to the building fund would keep doing so. We've made a huge difference, and there's more to be done. In fact, we'll keep the building fund open now indefinitely. We have a lot of things that need resolving around our building, and I can assure you we will use whatever we have with care and utmost discernment. But also again, thank you. Thank you to all those that have given financially. Your sacrifice is treated with respect and discernment in the ongoing running of this church. Let me say a prayer. Lord, we thank you for the resources that we have entrusted to us. Help us to be wise. But help us now, even at this moment, to listen to your voice speaking to us. Speak to us in ways, we ask, that we can hear and we can understand and we can act upon. We humble ourselves before you this morning. Amen. So my sermon today, as all good sermons are, is in three parts. And I have some really important things to say to you. The first part is this. I want to encourage us to be thankful. I want to push that line for a little bit. Because I want to stop for a bit this morning and take stock of what we have and the blessings that we enjoy, which come from the finances that have been entrusted into our care. So I've got some pictures. I haven't got pumpkins and cheeses and bales of hay, but I've got some pictures to symbolize a whole pile of things that we should be thankful for, that we have been able to afford, in both senses of the word, because of the finances that we have. So here we go. We all fortunate to have a home. There's some home and car keys up there where most of us would have driven here this morning. We are entrusted with those things. All of us have some clothes, thank goodness. And a lot of clothes, don't we? We actually got a lot of clothes. That's what we've been able to have. Some of us are able to take a holiday and we have a plane ticket or passport and we go different places, and that's afforded to us too because of our income. Entertainment. Now, maybe you might not all have Netflix, but you've got some form of entertainment in your life that you're able to do because of the money that you have. Most of us have got a phone. Some have got two. It's all because of what we have, what we're afforded. How about a hot shower? How good is that? Like, imagine if you didn't have hot water in your house, Rod Dyson. It was terrible for a week, wasn't it?
A few days.
Hot showers, just one of those things that we can afford because of what God has given to us. And even this next one, I mean, it's a groan, isn't it, to put it in and you go to the accountant or whatever, and but you are able to do it because you've earned some money. A tax return is something to be thankful for. These are common, some of them everyday items that we use because we have been blessed with finances. I'm sure you could mention many more things. I had the good fortune to be in New Zealand a couple of weeks ago, and there the cheap price of petrol is $2.20 a litre. I am now grateful for petrol at $1.65 a litre. Gratitude is fast fading in our society. It's been replaced by rights, demands, and have-to-haves. And I hear it, and I hear it echoed amongst us, and it saddens me. An attitude that includes gratitude is a beautiful thing to foster in your soul. Now, I know that modern life comes with significant stresses. It pushes us, it takes from us. It causes anxiety that it's never been seen before. But we are also more blessed than ever before with the resources and the opportunities that we have at our fingertips. We should be grateful. We should be thankful. We should stop more often than not and acknowledge those things that we have and express gratitude. This is especially true for those who profess to love Jesus. I want to read to you a reading for this morning, a part of Jesus' life from the Gospel of Luke, Luke 17. It'll be on the screen behind me, and from verse 11. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into the village, 10 men who had leprosy met him, and they stood at a distance. And they called out to him in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go, show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw that he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. And he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. He was a Samaritan. And Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praises to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." Now, when we read this small passage in the life of Jesus, we don't quite get the full impact of what's going on, and there's a lot there to unpack. But at face value, it tells us that there is some link between the healing of the leper and his expression of gratitude. I'm not sure how this all works, but I do know this, that gratitude enables a new sense of freedom to exist in our lives. It undoes the work of greed, it takes away desire, and it guards our hearts from jealousy. Now, under the seat, somewhere in the end aisles, is a bucket with some pens and some sticky notes. So give you a look under there and grab hold of that. Now, what I'd like you to do this morning is to share out the pens and grab 3 sticky notes each. That's 1, 2, 3 each. And this morning, you can see what the first service did. I want to ask you to do the same thing. I want you to take one of those sticky notes and write on it something that you are thankful for, something that you are grateful for, which is as a direct result of your finances. And then I'm going to ask you to stick it on the back, on the glass, and we're going to read it when we go and have Soup Sunday shortly. So if you've got it and you've written on it, feel free to stick it on the chair in front of you, otherwise it'll lose its stick and it won't stay there. It'll be important to read what others are grateful for. And over Soup Sunday, I encourage you, come back in and read those things. So happy for it to be spread around, can go on the glass further out, the cleaners will love us. But write on there something that you're grateful for because of the finances. The second point I want to raise with you this morning. I want us to think, I want us to talk about, I want us to mull over our response to God's goodness to us. Now, some of you might be tempted to switch off at this point, but before you do, all those things that we have now given thanks to God for came from somewhere. I suggest to you this morning they came from someone. When we acknowledge the gift, it's appropriate for us to acknowledge the giver. Now, if we're in a classic traditional service, the offering always came after the sermon. And that was my training. It's always worried me about how good the sermon was. It's meant to symbolize that once you have heard from God, once you've been fed from God's word, we would make a response back to God and acknowledge God's goodness towards us. Now, if I was, and I want to be this morning, and I am every morning, really honest with you, I have to admit that I find giving money away not very easy. And I'm very clear that I do not have the gift of giving. Neither do I have the gift of celibacy. However, for me, it's about a spiritual discipline. It's about a recognition that forms that this act of giving forms a part of my spiritual life. It's about me saying, God, you are in charge of my finances, and I am going to deliberately put my money where my faith is. For me, it's a choice, a specific choice, to throw my lot in with God. And so for me, I have to set up systems to do that. So I have to give my money electronically so that I enable that to happen, and it happens. In the Old Testament, it was the accepted norm that you set aside 10% as a tithe, and then if you wanted to give more, that was called an offering, and that was over and above the tithe. I've talked about this before. I find the 10% to be a good rule of thumb, but with some caveats. Now, I know there are people in situations where 10% is a major deal, and it's a difference between paying your rent or not paying your rent. Also, I know there are others who have been blessed to far exceed the 10% mark because of their income, because of the way they can generate income, or their stage of life. For most of us, though, 10% is a really solid amount, and it hurts. But that serves to remind us of the importance of what we are doing and the significance of the action. When it hurts, we are forced again to ask the question, is this really important to me? Is God really important to me? So I want to ask you that same question today. At what cost is God important to you? Now, there are a lot of things that I could say here about all those who have gone before us and those that have given so much, etc., etc. But in no way do I want this sermon to be construed as guilt at all. This is a spiritual matter for you to wrestle with. Each of us needs to take responsibility for our own faith, in our own development, and our own attitude as we respond towards God. And so in a short period, we're going to walk out of here and we're going to have Soup Sunday and my words will be quickly forgotten. Yet the importance of the topic is not so easily shunned. This is something that has direct correlation to your spiritual development. A hero of mine, John Wesley, a church reformer, an evangelist, a preacher, quite a few hundred years ago, said there are two conversions of a person, one of the heart and the other one of the wallet. It's so true. At what cost is God important to you? So using the post-it note, the second post-it note that you have, could you write on there, could you draw on there a big question mark? And once you have drawn the question mark, fold it into your wallet or your purse or your handbag or put it in your phone case. And then during the week, take it out and ask yourself the question, What is the importance of God over all the other things in my life, particularly my finances? So write a question mark, tuck it away somewhere safe that you'll find it during the week. My third point. My third point is I want to tell you why we, myself included, should be generous towards this church. You know, I find myself in the role of the key advocate for this church on all sorts of levels. And I realise that the just avoid it approach and someone else will do it is not in the job description of the senior pastor. So I need to tell you today that this church needs your financial support. And it's my job to make this known to you. There are lots of other good causes that have many avenues of raising funds. There are lots of charities, have a wide pool of people to draw from. This church only has us. And I want to be really clear, and while service is very important, I am not this morning talking about service, I am talking about finances. So right now, before you in the third part of this sermon, I need to bring to you the ongoing the needs of this church. This church needs your support for all sorts of reasons. Some of them are really mundane and really boring. To have a building here in this area, we have to pay certain things. To have flushing toilets, we need to pay sewerage. I'm sure you're glad we pay the sewerage. So we have to clean this complex, repaint some parts, fix some bits. For us to survive in a network world, we need to pay the telephone bill, the internet bill. The bulbs in the projectors need replacing. The mics wear out. People, can you believe it, drink free tea and coffee. We have to put toilet paper and hand towel in the loos, and we have to put batteries in the clocks. We have paid staff, yes, who do all sorts of things. They organise and they do ministry, but they also clean up, manage the database, and do stuff that nobody else wants to do. You know exactly what I'm talking about because you do it in your house as well. We also have wider responsibilities, things like our mission and service fund to the synod and to the presbytery. We support the local school chaplains generously. We support an overseas missionary family and other things that are just part of being a church in this bigger community. We also give money away, and we do it quietly. No one knows about it, to those in need in our community. Of course, by far, our biggest expenditure is salaries. We do this because there are key areas in the life of our church that need to be resourced. A church this size needs to provide a level of competence in particular areas. Bigger to medium-sized churches have a higher expectation on the quality and level of programs than smaller churches. Even in a church like us, particularly in a church like us, we are lagging with the resources that we can put into different programs. Increasingly, administration, risk management, and financial management are taking up much more of our time. And anyone in a school or a business knows the truth of this. But I want to be really clear. As senior pastor, despite our best efforts, despite people on team, people staff and people who are non-staffed, who are working really hard, there are a whole pile of things that we don't get right. And a nice way to say it is that we have growth areas. It seems that the bigger this church gets, the bigger that our growth areas expand. And I've said it before that the holes in this, in some things that we have, are so big that you could drive a truck right through them. And so I want to say this morning, if you or your loved ones or those whom you know have been negatively affected by either our ineptitude, our inability to provide the resources that are needed at particular things, our oversight, or just our busyness, then I apologize for that. Every week, I have a conversation or I receive emails that point out this church's failings. And I'm actually okay in hearing these things when they're raised in a mature way. It's important that we get things right. It's important that we care for our community and that we show that we listen. Unfortunately, with all the powers that I have, I can't stop us and get it all right and then restart us and keep us moving. I do wish, though, I heard more grumblings about people who were once here and who now don't follow Jesus anymore. I do wish I had conversations about how we could be more innovative with our discipleship. I do wish I received emails where people expressed concerns over our wider community about people who don't love Jesus. People who are facing eternity without knowing him. That's my heart. The great news is that there is a whole pile of good stuff that presents a wonderful picture as to why we should give, all give, towards this church. We continue to have baptisms, many baptisms. Don't they excite you when you see them? They do me. Our Alpha, our XS youth ministry, our mission trips, they're changing lives. And we've seen the results of those lives being changed. The other night, over 30 of our playgroup parents, most of who don't come here to worship, came to a seminar to grow as a parent by learning how to better support the social and emotional development of their children. You've been here, many of you have been here when we've all heard the stories of how people have had their lives changed by various ministry aspects of this church. The age range of people that having their lives changed is spectacular. It's just so broad. And I hear those stories, and I'm so glad I don't have to stand up straight after they've done their interview because I'm moved to tears on many occasions. It's so filled with joy. I'm overjoyed that we are having a positive effect. Guess what? It's working. It's really working. There's so many ministry areas that we have underway at the moment. It would take me minutes to list them all off. And my hope going forward, as well as just presenting an annual budget to our congregation, that we would present an annual budget report of the details that detail such things as volunteer hours and the effects of our work in the wider community. And I suspect if we were able to capture even a small portion of that, we would be encouraged beyond belief. God is working in our community. God is working in our church, and we are making a difference in this area. Last week, I had the privilege of an hour and a half with the new mayor of the Onkapringa Council. And she came here to me and listened and had a tour of our building, and I listened to her hopes and her dreams for this council area, and I was really warmed to hear her heart for this district. And I thanked her for the Road to Christmas grant. And then, and she took in a breath because she thought I was going to ask for something. And I did. I asked her how we as a church could help her in the needs that she perceived in this area. And I wish you were there to see her eyes widen. She didn't know how to answer me. So I'll just let you know that the conversation will continue when she recovers from her shock and gets back to me. One of these days, I'll come back to you with an answer. Can you imagine us partnering with the council in this area in a need that we together could alleviate? How good would that be? Currently, some of us are working on an internal program called Growth Tracks. Growth Tracks will help us disciple people in a systematic way. Our plan is to run it on a Sunday morning. Yep, you heard that right. So that we're not asking people to come out on another night. Growth Tracks will help all of us get a sense of who we are, where the church is headed, how to get involved and how to be a member of this church, among other things. More about that in the future. Also, we've been working hard on an idea we loosely call the Seed School of Discipleship. Our ongoing internships are part of that, but we want to do more, so much more. In due course, Rod and I would like to do an overview of the Old and the New Testaments. And we've also got a seminar on grief in the pipeline. There are a lot of things that I could say about our plans going forward. I've got stacks of ideas in my head, but I've already taken a lot of time, so let me hone in on this last one thing. We can build a great church. Truly, we can build a great church. We can run all these great programs. We can do even more. We can have incredible events. We can do wonderful things that encourage all of us greatly. And we will fail because my heart burns for those who don't yet know Jesus. We have to have this as our number one priority, not just written on the wall out there, but inside of us. It has to be our key objective. It has to be top of the list of our KPIs. This is what we exist for. This is the reason that I'm in ministry. This is what fires me up. This is the reason I'm here at this church at this time, to lead you in this area. Now, I know I have many friends who have similar hearts here. And this is why, one reason why I've been championing Alpha. It is the best way I know how to bring people to Jesus. But that's not all we can do. So here's the third sticky label, okay? The third little task I've got for you this morning. Here's the challenge. I bet you've got ideas how we can bring people to Jesus too. If so, write one down on that sticky label. Write down your idea how we can bring people to Jesus, how we can connect with the community. And then here's the work I want you to do. Share it with your small group. Share it with your family, or find someone else you trust and share it with them. The reason I'm asking you to share this idea is that God usually, when ideas come from God, they usually have a strong resonance with others. It's what I like to call a simmering exercise. You put it on the heat and see what simmers and see what bubbles out. So if you've got an idea, write it down on that sticky label and share it with others. So today, I've asked you to be filled with gratitude. I've asked us to think about what our financial response to God is, and I've asked you to give us to give towards the needs and ministry of this church. It cannot function without your generosity. So here's the big ask at the end point of this sermon. You ready for it? Could you please give towards this church? That's it. I want to show you a picture. I want to tell you a story as we finish up. I took this picture on Friday morning. I was out down the southeast, and you can see on the left-hand side some rays of light, the sunlight. It was just not long after dawn, and you can see in the middle a very faint little trail that's come through the dew on the grass. Can you see that? It's right in the middle. Can you see it? Yep, okay. Most of you can see it, okay. That's a little trail that was left by a wombat as that wombat was heading back to its burrow. And in a few minutes, that trail will be erased. I thought about that, and I thought about us collectively. I thought about the mark that we leave on this world, because the mark of that wombat would have gone within just a couple minutes as the sun came across from the east and sort of stood up and it melted the dew, and that mark would be gone forever. And I thought about that as I had an incident yesterday. I was coming home, I dropped my daughter off to the airport, and I was coming home driving down South Road, and I drive a fairly reasonably large vehicle, and the vehicle in front of me, the very nice man in front of me, decided to make what I would consider an illegal right turn. Now, if you know South Road, two lanes, and South Road heading north, two lanes as well. And the person decided to turn in this little spot. I don't quite know what he was thinking. Maybe he wasn't. And I was a fair way behind him, and I was okay. I mean, I hit the brakes really hard to stop. The very large Kenworth that was behind me, there was no way he was going to stop. And as I looked in the rear vision mirror and I thought, I'm not going to walk away from this, or I'm not going to get away from this at all. It was one of those moments where I knew I was just about to meet Jesus. Now, that Kenworth driver, I'd like to know who he was, because he's the best Kenworth driver in the world. Because he somehow managed to get his truck from the right lane into the left lane, and all the other cars in the left lane managed to climb the banks and get up on the median strip on that side, and we avoided a crash. Now, as I went past the other driver in his Mercedes four drive, and I did suggest maybe there's a better way that he could have been on the road, with the object that's in the middle of my steering wheel, he took no responsibility for his action. In fact, he gave me a one-finger wave. I'm not quite sure what that means. I tell you these two things because they're linked together, and they're linked about what I want to say today. What's your legacy? What mark are you leaving on this world? Because it goes sooner than you think. And very quickly, it's over. And yesterday, it could have been over for me. When we give towards this church, when we put in with this church, what we're doing is we are giving towards those who don't yet belong to this place. And I, for one, while I am the senior pastor, while I have any control, any power in this place, we're going to burn hot for that one goal. I commend it to you. Let me say a prayer. We thank you, Jesus, for your gifts to us, constant resources that you provide for us. And even in difficult times and struggle times, you still keep giving and giving and giving. We're blessed with our financial resources. We're blessed with the things that we have. And we say this morning, thank you for those things. Thank you for providing for us. Help us to be real in our conversations with you, in your challenge to support your church and to bring others to know you in a wonderful and a saving way. In your name we pray.